This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Okay, well, I have a wonderful program today. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to Chris Pavone about his wonderful book, The Paris Diversion. Wow, and is this one diverting book? It's really exciting. So I'm looking forward to that. In a few minutes, I'm going to talk about someone we lost this week, Mary Higgins Clark. But first, I want to ask Big Ed in the control room. Hey, Big Ed, did you have a good weekend here with the game?
Oh, yeah, it was a good game. I almost picked the score.
Yeah? Really? So you were for Kansas City all the time?
Yeah, I was for Kansas City, and I said that Kansas City would win by four, and they had the ball with 1 minute left, and I was yelling, don't score.
Did you have a bet on that? I had a bet.
No, I don't bet.
I bet a cupcake. So I won the cupcake, but I don't know the details like you do. All I know is I like the name Patrick. I always pick
Mahomes.
So I always pick a team by the name of somebody I like.
Well, that's different because most women pick them because of their pretty helmets.
I like the name Patrick because, you know, the anniversary of Joy on Paper is going to be on St. Patrick's Day this year. Do you realize that?
Yeah, and I remember you saying that.
And it was I started this program on St. Patrick's Day almost 5 years ago. So it's really exciting. So that's why I love that name. That's why I picked him. And I got the chocolate cupcake.
Yeah, I think we're serving green beer that day, too.
Okay. Well, I'll get the green beer, too. Okay, Ed. Well, it's always nice to get you on the air a little bit because I do get comments from people who say, oh, tell me something about Big Ed. So, well, you know, I as I was telling Ed, this is going to be the fifth anniversary. And over these years, I've had some absolutely marvelous interviews. And when I started the program, I had never imagined that I would be talking to so many of the authors whose works I had admired for years and who I was in awe of. And then to find out, you know, I get on this radio program, I start the program, and one after another, they start coming on, and so many of my absolute favorites. I think Nelson DeMille has to stand out because when I got him on the program, I thought this is so amazing. I was just so excited. And so it was really a thrill for me to get him. And of course, all of the other wonderful New York Times bestselling, global bestselling authors like David Baldacci and, you know, all of these great authors that I have. But the one who always stood out, besides Sue Grafton, because she was sort of special to me because she had worked in a lab when she was young, and I worked in a lab, and so we had a nice connection here. But it was Mary Higgins Clark, of course. It was like a dream interview. And it's so funny that I the first time she was on, you know, I was really nervous, but we were talking, and after a while, we started relaxing, and I'm just chatting to her, and she's chatting away. And what happens with so many authors, they do a lot of interviews when they have a release date, and they sort of had the same, that's why if you listen to many, many radio programs or blogs, particularly on the internet, many of the authors will say the exact same thing. Simply because, you know, that's what they've worked up to talk to, you know, in these interviews. But I've never done these very short interviews, like satellite interviews, where, you know, the authors go one after another and repeat the same thing. I just like to chat. Authors and publicists will send me, you know, lists of possible questions. And then I always write back, well, I never look at questions because I just want to chat with the author. And in fact, because I know most authors' books by the time they come on here, if I don't know their books, I read their books. I don't just read one book. I rarely just read one book from an author, not the new release. I'll read their first book, their second book. And with Mary Higgins Clark, I had no problem because I had been reading her books since they came out. I mean, the very first book and every book thereafter, I was reading. And so I was so thrilled to be able to talk to her. And as we were chatting in this first interview, she also forgot she was on the radio. Usually, she does. I'm going to play in a minute a snippet, and you'll see that she has a sort of a canned answer to a question. But she will repeat this story in quite a few interviews you hear her give. But most of it was she just forgot she was on the radio. So much so that she gave out her real home address. Of course, I immediately realized I tried to cover it up. And then when I did the tape, I cut it out. But the next day, now this had never happened. I often get emails from authors, and they'll say, you know, I forgot I was on the radio. It was so much fun. You went longer than I expected. And that happens because sometimes I'll just cancel the commercials. Like when I had Peter Riva on last week, I mean, there was no way I was going to stop talking to him. And I just skipped the commercials, and thank goodness that Larson and Larson, Bill Larson understands, and Glenn Erickson understands that when you're on a roll, you can't stop. And so I really appreciate when they don't mind that I skip their commercials. But anyway, so I'm, it was funny. As I said, I get these emails saying thank you, and about, you know, just forgetting that they were on radio. But the day after that interview, I get this call, and it's an unpublished number. And I was still starting out, so I wasn't getting that many calls, and I answered it, of course. And it was Mary Higgins Clark. Now, do you know how thrilling it is to get a call from Mary Higgins Clark? And so she said, you know, I think perhaps she thanked me for the interview. And then she mentioned, you know, I think perhaps I mentioned my address. And I said, yeah, don't worry, I cut it out. But and so we chatted, and over the next 3 years that I've been talking to her, and she's been on the program many times, but it was always cute that I got a call from Mary Higgins Clark, and you know, I've saved it on my phone. You know, the ID, it's unpublished, but you know what the heck, it's I know who it is, and so it was really exciting. So as I said, she's one, I think, the tops. She's one of the 9 Mystery Writer of America authors that I've spoken to. And I'm going to add at least 2 more in the next few months. And I'm trying to get as many as I can. But I want to play just this little snippet of an interview I had with Mary.
Hi, Patsy.
Well, it is an honor, such a great privilege to welcome to Joy on Paper, the Queen of Suspense. As I have been telling my audiences for a long time, your work embodies everything that a writer wants in a book, and you are just so fantastic. I'm always inspired by your work, and of course, every year, I think almost every year I can remember, you've got a new book coming out.
Well, actually, the total is 53 right now.
Whoa, that's fantastic.
There were some years of several in a year. Well, okay. I love to write.
Well, the time and energy that you put into it is a work of joy.
It is a work, but you know, of joy. You know, there's a saying, if you want to be happy for a month, no, if you want to be happy for a year, win the lottery. If you want to be happy for life, love what you do. Now, there's another part that I don't say because it's not altruistic. If you want to be happy for a month, get married. That I don't believe.
The new book is called As Time Goes By. And, of course, as always, you don't disappoint your readers. It's a fantastic book. Another thriller based on taking an ordinary person and putting them into a situation, much like Alfred Hitchcock liked to do with his characters.
Well, you see, I like ordinary people nice people, and it's as though something cuts across their, in front of them, cuts across and shakes up their lives. And this one, a 43-year-old Betsy, is accused of murdering her Alzheimer's husband. He had early Alzheimer's, has had it for 8 years, and the night before he is found dead in his bed, she says, "I can't take it anymore." And the next morning, Dr. Ted is found. When he gets to the funeral home, they realize that the back of his skull had been crushed. And she's accused of the murder. And then we take it from there.
And we take it from there with another thrilling story. And I really like that you brought back Elvira and her husband.
Elvira and Willie are everybody's favorites. I have them in the new book I'm working on because I know what they're going to say when I use their names. I have no trouble writing their dialogue because I know them so well. And Elvira was named after the lady we lived next door to when I was very young. And Annie Potters was always cheerful. She had bright red hair. She wore jewelry, hands and fingers, and necklace and earrings. And she was a very homely woman. But she looked in the mirror and saw Cinderella.
And that's Elvira to a T.
And that's Elvira.
Exactly. And it's so much fun. I love seeing a character who wins the lottery and does something good with the money.
Yes. Oh, she does. But I gave her my apartment in New York. They moved from a very, very inexpensive place in Queens. But she keeps it just in case New York State bellies up and can't keep paying them.
Yeah, I like that attitude, too. I think one of the biggest compliments to you is that I live in a condo complex, and they have a large library where everybody brings their books to share with everybody else. Nobody ever brings your books. I mean, I would never bring your books downstairs. I said, no way. There's some books that you just never part with. And because the wonderful thing about your books, you read them once, and you can go back a few years later and go back and just enjoy it almost the same, even though you know the ending. It's sort of like you're like the only writer, except for Agatha Christie, that one can really do that. One can go back and reread and have that sort of same thrill. It's fantastic.
Oh, that's so very kind. Well, I'm an Irish storyteller. I always said that at the cradle, the fairy godmothers come and give us gifts. Well, the one who might have given me the voice of a lark did not show up. The one who might have given me a sense of rhythm was not there. The one who might have made me sew a fine seam was also missing. But the one who showed up, and I'm glad she did, said, "You will be an Irish storyteller." And I'm awfully glad that lady showed up.
Absolutely, because it's the best thing to be. And you tell a story so beautifully. You know your audience, so you don't disappoint. You don't do extraneous things. You don't get too gory. You don't get too explicit. And I think that's important for your readers to know that.
Well, Alfred Hitchcock did the same thing. You never saw violence on stage. You saw, well, think of Psycho. You saw him looking through that, pushing aside that mirror or frame that was on the wall. You see her silhouette in the bathtub. You see the knife, and then you see blood running down the drain. You never see in his movies anything explicit, and I've never used explicit sex. I just won't do it. When you think of Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights, books that throb with passion, but it's not on camera. And I believe, I mean, God knows I'm not comparing myself to those writers, but that they could write about passion without explicit detail.
You know, we will all miss the queen of suspense, because she really was. As I said, I have her books. I would never give them away. And they are just like Agatha Christie. They are books that you can go back to, and they always seem as fresh. I mean, you never think that, you know, that was written 10 years ago, or that was written 15 years ago. They seem as fresh today. She just knew. Well, this is one of the things I will say, too. There is a tendency in today's current cycle that people are including a lot of current events in their books. And they're even, it's all right to include a lot of television references, things that are going to stay around for 100 years. But sometimes if you overdo it, then the book doesn't seem fresh. So you can read Mary Higgins Clark's books because she doesn't have specific time frame that the books take part in. And then so that's why, and with Agatha Christie too, you know they're set in a certain era, but you can go back and read them over and over, as many people do. Now, one of the wonderful things, of course, here on Joy on Paper, we do these book buzzes, which are just promos for authors. We do them because authors so often, and even Mary Higgins Clark, I mean, she told me, you know, her days, of course, of going around for major book tours were over. She was, you know, by the time I was talking to her, she was already in her late 80s. But in the olden days, as she said, she did do a lot of book tours. But nowadays, it's not easy for an author to get book tours. So we do these promos so that we can help keep an author's name out there. And one of Rita Moreau's first book buzzes was for Mary Higgins Clark. And we're going to play that now. And then after that, we'll go to commercial and I'll come back and introduce the next guest.
Here's the buzz. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with today's book buzz. Are you looking for a great mystery to curl up with on a lazy afternoon this summer? Then I have just the perfect book for you. Mary Higgins Clark's All By Myself Alone. Here's the buzz. 100 wealthy A-list guests, a priceless necklace, and old enemies on the maiden voyage of a luxury cruise liner. What could go wrong? It's murder on the high seas with this page-turning mystery from the Queen of Suspense. What secrets will be uncovered? Why is Lady Emily Haywood carrying an emerald necklace that was once worn by Cleopatra? Why was Celia Kilbride invited on the cruise to give lectures on gemology? Celia has grabbed at the chance to get away from bad publicity and a husband who betrayed her, but instead finds herself in mortal danger. Her only friends on board are Willie and Elvira Meehan. Can Elvira, an amateur sleuth, help Celia? With lots of twists and turns, All By Myself Alone will keep you guessing. Mary Higgins Clark does it again. A great book that is a fun read. She is a mystery writer of America's grandmaster who never lets us down. Get it today online and enjoy the voyage. By the way, Mary Higgins Clark has been on Joy on Paper 3 times. You can listen to her interviews with Patsy with a Z. Just go to our webpage and click on Archive. Hey, this is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on mysteries you should not miss, click on Book Buzz with Rita Moreau. Buzzing off for now.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back, and I'm just waiting for a call in from Chris Pavone. And as soon as he gets on the phone, we will talk to him. But again, I want to tell everyone that you can, this weekend, I'm going to do a special page for Mary Higgins Clark, and I will have all of her interviews that we did together, and we will have them up. And again, it's wonderful. It's going to be a tribute to her and to just her kindness to me and to all writers. She was a wonderful, wonderful, generous person, always out there willing to help other authors, always eager to just do good. One of the reasons I love her character Elvira is in her books that feature Elvira, who wins the lottery. Elvira does good things with her money. So she tries to help people. And Mary Higgins Clark, all her life, right, once she became successful, she was out there working and helping other authors and promoting them, and just a warm and generous person. Sometimes in your life, you have somebody that you really admire, and I, for years, of course, I admired her and I loved her books. And then to have this opportunity that I've had to, you know, spend even, you know, when you add it up, not a lot of time, but we did get to know each other, and I did get a personal call from her, which was a very, very heartwarming for me. She said I could call her anytime, which was really funny. And I Mary Higgins Clark, to say that to me was a real, real thrill. And so I'm just so happy that I had this opportunity and this time that I was able to get to know her a little bit, and then to preserve these memories, because as I said, she was an Irish storyteller. She had so many stories to tell about her life, and even the story about the inspiration for Elvira, who was somebody that she knew as a child. And this is a wonderful thing about being a writer. Be observant. Start being noticing things and maybe taking notes from a young age, because you never know when 50 years later, you know, you look back and you remember somebody and you say, yeah, you know, that person would make a great character. And so this was, she based Elvira on somebody, a very funny woman that she had gotten to know as a child. So you never know where inspiration will come from, and you have to have all these things in your head. But it also helps if you also have just started to write them down, because remember, she always talked about the joy of writing. And so she loved she told me that she just loved the name of the program, because that's what she felt like. Even though, you know, she'd get up at 5 in the morning, she'd work very hard on her books. Every page was perfection, because she wanted them to be perfect, perfect for the reader. And so she was an absolute thrill for me to talk to her. And I hope that, you'll read her books. We don't stop reading her books just because she's gone. So a special thank you again to the Queen of Suspense, wherever she is, and thinking about me, and I will be thinking about her. Well, now I am going to talk to somebody who has really, he has created a, he created a problem for me. And I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Chris Pavone. Because we're going to talk about...
Hi,
Chris. How are you?
No, I'm great. How are you?
Okay, well, we're going to talk about the Paris diversion and probably the expats, because I was an expat for many, many years. And so I relate very well. But I was, it's funny that one of the things is when I was reading, and I'm reading your book and I'm enjoying it, and I think I was like somewhere around the seventh chapter, I was just about there, and I said, "What? Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness!" And I had to just stop reading, and I had to go to the dictionary. Well, actually, this time, nowadays we go to the internet, and I had to look up tenterhooks because I was on tenterhooks. It's funny how that phrase came into my mind. I was like, "I'm reading this book, and it's suspenseful, and I'm." And I, you know, really excited because you have all these little things happening. You're building up the you know, the story. And suddenly the word on tenterhooks came into my mind. And I've never used that in conversation. And I know I've never written it down. Of course, you know, you read it many times. But I wanted to go back and really understand where that come from. Because what you created here... A situation for me that I just had to know because I was so, I'm holding my breath. I'm like, this is amazing. You did such a great job here of building up this suspense. I have to tell people, it's, you know, this book is set in, 12 hours of one city, 12 hours, and as they say, 12 hours, one city, many secrets, but 12 hours, and we're counting down the minutes. each chapter, we're getting, you know, a little more time, and so I was on tenterhooks. And tenterhooks is actually an 18th century expression, and a tenter was the thing they used to stretch cloth, and so I felt stretched, I can tell you.
Well, thank you.
So, you know, you might find more people saying, oh, they're on tenterhooks when they're reading your books. Wow. You know, as I said, I was an expat. I lived in England for a long time. And every other weekend, we would go down to Paris.
Yeah.
So you...
It's one of the great things about Europe, isn't it?
Isn't it wonderful? And so you brought me back to Paris. I know this... of course, I know all the streets so well. I've walked those streets many, many times. And so for me, it was like, wow, it was wonderful the way you brought, you know, me right into Paris.
Well, thank you so much.
You know, I don't know what to tell people about this book. I mean, first of all, you're great at reveals. So you can tell us what you want people to say, to know about your book, but don't give it all away. You know, I hate when I did have an author who came on and, I mean, literally told the whole story in 5 minutes, and I thought, why is anybody going to buy this book? You're not going to be on tenterhooks because you know the ending. And I also, I hate like some of the blurbs sometimes on Amazon where they're giving away too much. I never look at the questions a publicist send me. I never look at the back of the book. I never look at anything because I want that excitement from the first page. And I got it with you.
Thank you very much. I tried to generate excitement in this book by setting up a situation that we as readers think that we know what's going to go on because we've seen this movie, we've seen this television show, we've read this book a bunch of times over the past 20 years, ever since September 11th in 2001 when we saw an event happen in the United States that changed our perception about the way the world operated. And so we're prepared to see a certain type of story when we see certain types of things happen, like the things that happen at the beginning of this book, which is that a man walks into the courtyard of the largest city in the world.
Okay, I don't want you to give too much time because I didn't know where he was going. Tell people. It was building up. I was building up. This is what was so nice about your book. You give all this little bit. You take us like step by step, minute by minute, into the story.
Yeah.
And I don't want to know. I don't want to tell people. I just don't want to tell people. people.
Well, then you're really hamstringing me. What I can tell people.
I know. What can we? Let's talk about the character. We can talk, you know, because I don't want them to know where he's going. I really don't. I think it's a mistake because that was one of the things. As I mean, you dropped the clues. You obviously wrote it very carefully. You knew what you wanted. You knew you wanted to make us crazy. Simba, you wanted to put us on tenterhooks. I mean, you're stretching us to the limit, you know. And so then you sort of, and this happens. I know you're doing a lot of interviews, and you'll probably say where he went. I don't want people to know where he's going. He's going someplace.
I won't tell you that, but I do want to say this. I wanted to create a story in which I set up readers to expect a certain type of event and a certain type of protagonist good guy and a certain type of antagonist bad guy, because we have these expectations about what people are. So when we see our protagonist, we see this woman, she's an American, she's a mom, she drops her kids off at school, she meets her husband at a cafe, they're having marital problems, she's trying to solve by being more deliberate about being a wife, about being a mother, trying to be this type of grown-up who does things the right way and has the right types of relationships with everybody. And we see her as this good guy, as the hero in the story. And she will be, but she's not the expected type of hero. And the bad guys are not the expected types of bad guys. And the thing that they're doing is not what you'd expect. I wanted to write a book about terrorism, but not about the terrorist event itself. Not a book that had, not a plot with death and dismemberment and large-scale murder. I didn't want to write that, because that's the thing that we expect when we hear that it's going to be a book about terrorism, this gigantic threat. I wanted to write a story that took our expectations of that type of plot and used those expectations against readers to surprise them into not seeing what's coming in this story. That was my goal. And a large part of that has to do with, yes, the protagonist, and also what goes on elsewhere in the early parts of the stories. I'm setting you up to see something that then doesn't happen.
Yes. And and it's true. It's true. And you know, the thing is, you build us up. Really, it is quite, I think, a talent, what you did, the dropping a little clue here, a little clue here, a little leading us to a certain place. And that's why I think that's part of the excitement of it. And let's talk about the main characters, because as you had a previous book called The Expat. So explain that. Maybe we can explain expats in relation to this book.
Sure. When I was 40 years old, I'm a lifelong New Yorker, and I was a book editor for my whole career, and I liked my life here. But my wife came home from work one night and said, "What would you think of living in Luxembourg?" And it had never occurred to me to live in Luxembourg. I barely knew where Luxembourg was. I thought maybe it was a state in Germany. I was very surprised to find the possibility of moving there. And again, I never lived anywhere else, and I felt that was a huge hole in my personal experience and sort of a negative mark against my bravery that I'd never set forth into the world and gone to live someplace other than where I grew up. And so we moved abroad with our 4-year-old twins and our middle-aged Cocker Spaniel for my wife's job in Luxembourg, a place where I was not going to be able to work. I was not going to be able to continue my book publishing career in Luxembourg. And I became a stay-at-home parent to these little boys and somebody who had to muddle through my day speaking a language I didn't really speak and making entirely new friends and being someone not just who was a full-time parent and an expat trailing spouse, but someone who did no longer have a career and the identity that I'd built up over 40 years, and I was very much at sea, and I wanted to write a book about that, about how disorienting it is to move to a foreign place in middle age and become this new type of person and make all these new friends and invent this whole new life. And while I was doing it, it occurred to me that it was a vast opportunity to become someone different. And not just for me, but for everyone and for fictional characters in particular who could become someone different. That this was an opportunity that people could take in a fictional world to hide from massive crimes or to commit them. And that idea grew into The Expats, which was my first novel, and I absolutely loved everything about that experience. I love the characters in that book. I love the plot. I love how the book went out into the world. I love the success that it found. And I knew that I wanted to follow it up one day, but I didn't want to write a sequel immediately after the first one. So I wrote some other books, and then I kept having this character, Kate Moore, come nagging back at me as someone I wanted to write more about. And I finally got that idea a few summers ago when I was by myself in Paris for a week writing, and this entirely new idea presented itself to me, a book that would be perfect to have Kate Moore as its protagonist.
Well, exactly. I can see why she'd stick in your head, because she's great from, you know, in The Expats. And this story, you know, now I was in Paris, the years I was in Paris was before internet, really. Just it might have just started, but, you know, I didn't have American anything. It was the days where the Herald Tribune was the big deal, big deal for us. You know.
Yeah.
You know, I've been there not real recently, because partly I don't like all the changes. I don't like seeing the, you know, everything that's happening there. I don't know if I can even face Notre Dame, because that was like our go-to place. It's very difficult, but the way you write about Paris, and your descriptions, even simple things like sitting in a cafe, and you know, and the waiter knows you, and the waiter is connected to the cafe, and he's, you know, going to be there. It's a career. All of these things that I experienced, that you brought back, for me, and I know for the new readers, they'll really enjoy seeing this part of Paris, your insights into you know, the air, the city, and also of the people. I love some of your descriptions of the people.
Well, thank you. I mean, I wanted this book to be a serious thriller with important themes and credible characters, but I also wanted it to be a certain amount of fun. That I think we all, even if we haven't been there, we all see Paris as a certain type of fun place. And you can, even if you've never set foot there, you can see it in your mind because you've seen it in so many different other media. You know what these places look like, and you suspect what it smells like and what it feels like to sit in the cafe. And I wanted to try to bring some of that fun into the reading experience, whether it's for people who've been there a lot or just once or never been and never intend to go. I still wanted everybody to feel like they were there for the 10 or 12 or 15 hours it takes to read this book, or however long it takes you to read a book.
Well, if for people who just can't put it down, it didn't take me that long, but except for that break there where I have to go look up something, you know, do some research there. It was funny. As I was doing it, as I stopped and put the book, because it was so vivid in my mind. On tenterhooks. I'm on tenterhooks. Where the heck are tenterhooks? So I had to go and look it up. It was so funny. But I thought, so when I finished that, I said, whoa, this guy has really accomplished something. You know, this is a great compliment to you, that you get a person so worked up.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's the goal.
Well, you did it. And, of course, obviously, you got a lot of famous people worked up. And many of the people who have been on my program, like Jeffrey Deaver. And I mean, you have compliments from the very best. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, I've been very lucky to get the book into the right hands. That's one of the challenges in publishing, isn't it? It's not just to write a decent book, but to get anybody to pay attention to it is always hard. And I lucked out with this one.
Well, and deservedly so, because as I said, I think that I love slow reveals. I love little tricky things. That's what makes a book fun. Also, I noticed you made a verb out of a noun. Do you like to do that?
I like to make up a few words every book.
Yeah.
I was a copy editor for a long time, and copy editors are people whose job it is to make sure that authors adhere to all the rules and put commas in all the right places and don't make up words. But in my older part of my career, I've decided that making up some words is fun, and that the whole point of language is to communicate, and sometimes the best communication comes from a word that doesn't yet exist in the language. I honestly don't remember what words I made up for this book, but I know that I do it pretty regularly.
Yeah, well, she breakfasts the kids.
Yes, breakfast is a verb. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
yeah.
I got a kick out of that.
That's something you do, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, I got a kick out of that. Well, that's one of the things that, you know, you had a couple others in the book, and I thought, I like that. In normal circumstances, you know, the editor would just, you know, well, in the old days, you would have seen it. Nowadays, they just do that horrible thing on the internet where they auto-correct or whatever. And I tell you, you can't use the word breakfast. I'm sure I don't know what program you were writing, it came up and said, you can't use the word breakfast. You know, but I liked it.
Well, thank you. Yes, my word processing program often tells me that I'm not using a real word.
But that's part of the joy of writing, finding sort of a new way to express yourself. And as you know, as an editor, you know that sometimes a little change like that is good because, I'm telling you one thing from my point of view, I get a lot of books. Sometimes I get eight a day.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. And I'm a fast reader. I'm a good reader. I've read so many books in my life. I've been reading since I was 2 years old. But I am getting more and more books where I realize that they have been run through grammar programs. Because the auto correction or the suggested word is the same suggested word over and over. And I'm like, I recognize that in about five pages, I can recognize when something has been overly grammarly corrected on, you know, on different programs. And I resent that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hate to think what we would do to some famous authors. You know, let's put Charlotte Brontë. Oh boy, you know, it's just there has to be some originality in your work, and it has to sort of come out from your heart. And if she breakfasts the kids, let her breakfast the kids, as long as she doesn't breakfast on the kids. You know, nowadays you never know. You know, with the kind of books that sometimes I get. Oh yeah. She just ate the kids for breakfast. No, you know, we don't want that. But I thought it was clever and smart.
Well, thank you very much. I think I read a lot. I read a tremendous amount of fiction, and although I write what I hope are rich, complicated plots with a lot of great twists that have readers oohing and aahing, I know that 5 or 10 or 15 years later, readers are not going to remember the plot twists. They're going to remember, as I do and you do, they're going to remember the characters, and they're going to remember what they liked about the characters and what they didn't, and how real the characters are and what they felt while being inhabiting the personality of these people. And I think the most important thing for authors to do writing any type of fiction is to create a voice, is to have this person sound like a real person and not sound like every other person in the world, not sound like, as you say, an auto-corrected, auto-tuned version of a person who uses all the words that artificial intelligence would suggest, but a person whose language has real cadences and who makes up words or speaks in a certain type of way that makes it clear that this is an actual person. And for the people in my books, that person is some variation of me or people that I'm inventing. And for all the books that I love, I love them because of the strength of the voice. And not, which is not to say that they're all characters who I love because they're lovable characters. They're characters I love because they seem like real people to me. And that's what I'm trying to do myself, is to create people who sound like real characters. And part of that is language.
It is. And in your case, with Kate Moore, you have a winner. And her husband, Dexter, is a little problematic. But I do love when he hits his head on the table.
Mm-hmm.
I got a kick out of that. I thought, good, I like that. You deserve it. I was happy about that one. So there are all these little things that I, you know, so Kate Moore and Dex and you know, the also the storyline, I think will be something that people will remember. And that's why I think you got so many wonderful recommendations from people, because it's not easy, as you said, to get them. And you got some of the very, very best.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, being an expat myself, as I think for those of us who have lived overseas, we have sort of a different view. I'm not sure that it's a better view, but we see things sometimes, it's an experience to do that, to live overseas, isn't it?
It sure is. It's eye-opening. And it really changed the way I looked at the world and how I was going to inhabit it. And it made me change into a somewhat different type of person in ways that I think were positive. And there are definitely very hard parts about it. I mean, I was in a very comfortable situation where my wife was, we were there for her job, and I did not need to have a job. So that,
and you're living in Luxembourg, which is not bad. I can tell you, I one of my companies was registered in Luxembourg, so I was there twice. I was there two times, but you know, for a short time. But it's beautiful around there, right?
It is. It's a very appealing place to look at, and there are a lot of great things about it. But it's a strange and difficult experience to uproot yourself to a different continent. No matter how nice the circumstances are, no matter how nice the apartment is, it's still a hard thing to do, to face the reality of not having any friends somewhere, and not having any sort of safety net of family or old acquaintances, or just knowing how to do the things that you know how to do when you live in the place that you're from, and in ways that are very strange. I didn't know how to throw out the garbage, and it took a surprisingly long time for me to figure that out. I didn't know how to figure out where I could and could not park the car. I didn't know how to buy a car. I didn't know the word for the type of car we wanted to buy.
Or cranberry sauce. You know, when I was 21 years old, I bought a cottage in England. I bought a cottage not far from Jane Austen's birthplace, because that's what I dreamt about doing all the time. I was in school all the time. I was working. Mm-hmm. I saved my money so I could go to England, move to England. And I did. I bought a cottage in Sonning, near Henley. And of course you adjust very, you know, after a while, I would get to know the everybody in the village. But the one thing I couldn't find was cranberry sauce. Nobody wanted, nobody had, and it's Thanksgiving. And I say, okay, you know, I need canned cranberry sauce. You know, when you're raised on that's Thanksgiving. So it's funny, isn't it? The little things sometimes that you miss.
Yeah, it is. And our first Thanksgiving there, I cooked a turkey. I went out looking for a turkey, and I found the thing that was called the turkey, but it was like a 6-pound bird. It was ridiculous.
I know, there was no
cranberries on the entire continent.
I know. It was so funny that my first Thanksgiving, that's exactly what I tried to do. I landed up with a very, very big chicken, but I needed cranberry sauce. It was a crazy thing. And even Fortnum and Mason's didn't have it. And I went there. I went to Fortnum and Mason. I said, why don't you have cranberry sauce? And they're like, looked at me like, oh, crazy Americans. Anyway, but it was fun. And I just want to, quickly, because the time has gone so fast, what is your webpage? You have a webpage?
Got my webpage. Yeah. I do. It's my name, Chris Pavone.
And your Facebook is author Chris Pavone. And I just,
it is.
Yeah, Chris Pavone. And this book is called The Paris Diversion. I'm not telling people what's going to happen, but I will tell you that.
And you're not letting me do it either.
No,
yeah.
I'm not because you'll. It's just too much fun. It's too much fun for readers, page after page, minute by minute. I love this 12 hours. I mean, we have 12 hours, and every minute something is happening, and it's getting closer and closer, and it's exciting. You've written an exciting book. You have to be so proud of yourself.
Well, thank you very much. The book is now not quite a year old, but today is its paperback publication.
That's right.
So As of today, it is now available in paperback and also the new lower prices in ebook. And so I hope that a lot more people get excited about it as you have been.
Well, I hope so too, because Chris Pavone, you really are a very talented author. You know how to put a girl on tenterhooks, and that's a strange thing to say, but it's true. And I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Everybody get this book. It's really fun. Okay. Bye-bye now, Chris.
Bye.
All right. We are running out of time. This is what happens when I get really involved in a book. I'll tell you something funny about this book. There are so many places in this book that I actually sat. I mean, in the exact places where he's talking about. It really was, for me, a very exciting book to read. Oh, well, it's been a wonderful, wonderful program for me, because I can honor Mary Higgins Clark, and I hope that all of you don't stop reading her books. She may be gone, but she's not going to be forgotten. I think that's one of the title of one of her books, Not Forgotten. And we don't want to forget her. And so you can honor her by buying her books. And also, this Chris Pavone, he is really, really talented. And my goodness, he got reviews from everybody, and it's really fantastic. Now, what can I say? Oh, I can say this. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. And I predict that here, The Paris Diversion by Chris Pavone will be, you'll see it on one of those streaming video things, because one, he obviously has connections. It's nice when you were an editor. So he got really important people to read his book, and they gave him great reviews, and they are well-deserved, because it is an exciting book. So you never know, and you won't know. If you don't start writing, you won't have a chance to be a streaming video. You will think of that. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. Everybody, have a wonderful day. Bye-bye now.